1985. My wife and I own a log cabin in a secluded corner of upstate New York. It is in this cabin that our primary experiences have taken place. I will deal first with what I remember of December 26, 1985, and then with what was subsequently jogged into memory concerning October 4, 1985. Until I sought help, I remembered only that there was a strange disturbance on October 4th. An interviewer asked if I could recall any other unusual experiences in my past. The night of October 4th had also been one of turmoil, but it took discussions with the other people who had been in the cabin at the time to help me reconstruct it. This part of my narrative, covering December 26th, is derived from journal material I'd written before undergoing any hypnosis or even discussing my situation with anybody. When I was alone, this is what it was like. Our cabin is very hidden and quiet, part of a small group of cabins scattered across an area served by a private dirt road which itself branches off a little-used country road that leads to an old town that isn't even mentioned on many maps. We spent more than half our time at the cabin because I do most of my work there. We also have an apartment in New York City. Ours is a very sedate life. We don't go out much. We rarely drink more than wine, and neither of us has ever used drugs. From 1977 until 1983, I wrote imaginative thrillers, but in recent years I had been concentrating on much more serious fiction about peace and the environment, books that were firmly grounded in fact. Thus, at this time in my life, I wasn't even working on horror stories, and at no time had I ever been in danger of being deluded by them. We were having a lovely Christmas at the cabin in late December 1985. On Christmas Eve, there was snow, which continued for two more days. My son had discovered to his delight that the snow would fall in perfect crystalline flakes on his gloves if he stood still with his hands out. On December 26th, we spent a happy morning breaking in his new sled, then went cross-country skiing in the afternoon. For supper, we had leftover Christmas goose, cranberry sauce, and cold sweet potatoes. We drank seltzer with fresh lime in it. After our son went to bed, Ann and I sat quietly together listening to some music and reading. At about 8:30, I turned on the burglar alarm, which covers every accessible window and all the doors. For no reason then apparent, I had developed an unusual habit the previous fall. As secretly as ever, I made a tour of the house, peering in closets and even looking under the guest room bed for hidden intruders. I did this immediately after setting the alarm. By 10 o'clock, we were in bed. By 11, both of us were asleep. The night of the 26th was cold and cloudy. There was perhaps 8 inches of snow on the ground, and it was still falling lightly. I do not recall any dreams or disturbances at all. There was apparently a large unknown object seen in the immediate vicinity at approximately this time of the month, but a report of it would not be published for another week. Even when I read that report, though, I did not relate it in any way to my experience. Why should I? The report attributed the sightings to a practical joke. Only much later, when I researched it myself, did I discover how inaccurate that report was. I have never seen an unidentified flying object. I thought that the whole subject had been explained by science. It took me a couple of months to establish the connection between what had happened to me and possible non-human visitors. So unlikely did the connection seem. In the middle of the night of December 26, I do not know the exact time, I abruptly found myself awake. And I knew why. I heard a peculiar, whooshing, swirling noise coming from the living room downstairs. There was no random creak, no settling of the house, but a sound as if a large number of people were moving rapidly around the room. I listened carefully. The noise just didn't make sense. I sat up in bed, shocked and very curious. There was an edge of fear. The night was dead still, windless. My eyes went straight to the burglar alarm panel beside the bed. The system was armed and working perfectly. Not a covered window or door was opened, and nobody had entered. At least according to the row of glowing lights on the burglar alarm panel. What I did next may seem peculiar. I settled back in bed. For some reason, the extreme strangeness of what I was hearing did not rouse me to action. Over the course of this narrative, this sort of inappropriate response will be repeated many times. If something is strange enough, the reaction is very different from what one would think. The mind seems to tune it out as if by some sort of instinct. No sooner did I settle back than I noticed that one of the double doors leading into our bedroom was moving closed. As they closed outward, this meant that the opening was getting smaller, concealing whatever was behind that door. I sat up again. My mind was sharp. I was not asleep nor in a hypnopompic state between sleep and waking. I wish to be clear that I felt at that moment wide awake and in full possession of all my faculties. I could easily have gotten up and read a book or listened to the radio or gone for a midnight walk in the snow. I could not imagine what could be going on, and I got very uneasy. My heart started beating harder. I wasn't settled back anymore. I was sitting up, a question just forming in my mind. What could be moving the door? Then I saw edging around it. Have you ever read this book, Communion? Communion is the story of Whitley Strieber's attempt to deal with a shattering assault from the unknown. To all appearances, he and his family have had a series of elaborate personal encounters with intelligent non-human beings in his isolated cabin in upstate New York. At first, he thought he was losing his mind. Unconcerned with the whole phenomenon of UFOs and extraterrestrials, he viewed them as a false, unknown, easily explainable as misperceptions or hallucinations. But the visitors marched right into the middle of the life of this indifferent skeptic. Who are these visitors and where do they come from? Do they represent some as yet unidentified aspect of the human mind, incredible, almost beyond comprehension, but essentially human? Or are they what they seem to be, visitors of unknown origin? Whitley Strieber describes the stunning effects of his encounter in the most candid terms possible. Frightened but fascinated, he faces the unknown with clear and open curiosity as he struggles to understand these fierce little figures whose eyes seem to stare into the deepest core of being, seeking the very depths of the soul, seeking communion. Whitley Strieber is the author of a whole list of novels. Born and raised in Texas, made his home in New York for the past 20 years. During the course of events described in Communion, Whitley Strieber undertook a battery of psychological tests, was examined by a neurologist and a prominent psychiatrist, and had a CAT scan and a temporal lobe EEG. He also took and passed a lie detector test. All test results indicated that his experiences were not caused by a known psychological or physiological disorder. Dr. Bruce McAbee, U.S. Navy research physicist. Quote, communion is the gripping story of one man's repeated contact with apparent aliens or visitors. Taken in the context of the numerous similar reports which have been investigated by qualified researchers and scientists, the events so well described in communion become extremely significant. Assuming that these events are factual, and I think they are, then we human beings must begin a reevaluation of ourselves and our place in the universe. Dr. Brian O'Leary, space scientist and former astronaut. Quote, communion is more than an honest personal account of an awesome series of encounters with possible extraterrestrials. It forces us to open our mind to things that go far beyond today's limited perspective on scientific inquiry. Dr. John Gleedman, research psychologist. Quote, communion raises more questions for science than a galaxy full of black holes. It is beautifully written and one hell of a good read. A moving and courageous book. This is the story of one man's attempt to deal with a shattering assault from the unknown. It is a true story, as true as I know how to describe it. To all appearances, I've had an elaborate personal encounter with intelligent non-human beings. But who could they be and where have they come from? Are unidentified flying objects real? Are there goblins or demons or visitors? At first, I thought I was losing my mind, but I was interviewed with three psychologists and three psychiatrists, given a battery of psychological tests and a neurological examination, and found to fall within the normal range in all respects. I was also given a polygraph by an operator with 30 years experience and a pass without qualification. I'd been indifferent to the whole issue of unidentified flying objects and extraterrestrials. I viewed them as false, unknown, easily explainable, as misperceptions or hallucinations. Now what was I to think? The visitors marched right into the middle of the life of an indifferent skeptic without a moment's hesitation. Later, I found a large number of people who have had experiences similar to mine. Most of them were mentally stable. They did not cluster in any particular population group, but formed a cross-section of American society. I've met, among many others, a scientist, a policeman, and a federal officer who've had encounters. In my case, there were witnesses and physical after-effects that are hard to ignore. Either what is happening is that visitors are actually here, or the human mind is creating something that incredibly is close to a physical reality. Whatever it is, it's not presently understood by science. I know how it feels and looks to be with these visitors. I know how they sound when they talk and what it looks and smells like in their places. I know how they act and how they appear. I may even know something about why they're here and what they want from us. Seeming encounters with non-human beings is not new. They have a history dating back thousands of years. What is new in this latter part of the 20th century is that the encounters have taken on an intensity never before experienced by humankind. What happened to me was terrifying. It seemed completely real. It was in clear, normal memory. There's been a lot of scoffing directed at people who've been taken by the visitors. It's been falsely claimed that their memories are the side effect of hypnosis. This is not true. Most of them started with memories and undertook hypnosis to attempt greater recall. I suffered with this experience. Others suffered and are still suffering. It is essential that effective support be developed to aid those who have it. The scoffing has to stop. I am ashamed to say I've done it myself in the past, at least vicariously. As far as UFOs went, I was with the skeptics. People who face the visitors report fierce little figures with eyes that seem to stare into the deepest core of being, and those eyes are asking for something, perhaps even demanding it. whatever may be surfacing, it wants far more than a simple exchange. Now, this is not some paperback product of a hangover. This may be the most shocking book on the subject, along with one other written in many years. I could not imagine what could be going on, and I got very uneasy. My heart started beating harder. I wasn't settled back anymore or setting up. A question just forming in my mind, what could be moving the door? Then I saw edging around it. That's where I was, wasn't it? I could be persuaded to go back to that sometime the next year if you get on the telephone. Anybody in here read the book? Huh? One. I might have an explanation for you. A little different than others who've read the book. And it could take us back to some things we taught on previously. And then I saw edging around it this wicked lover. Then I saw edging around it this wicked lover crept. Then I saw edging around it a compact figure. It was so distinct and yet so completely, impossibly astonishing that at first I could not understand it at all. I simply sat there staring, too stunned to move. You want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
Months and months later, I discovered that another person who had the visitor experience first encountered it through the medium of this same peculiar figure rushing toward her in exactly the way that this one now rushed toward me. Before I narrate those next few seconds, though, I would like to give an exact description of how the figure looked to me. First, I will describe the physical conditions under which I was seeing it. Yeah. The room was dim but not dark. The burglar alarm panel alone emitted enough light for me to see. In addition, there was snow on the ground, and that added some ambient light. Had it been a person peeking into the room, I could have made out his or her features clearly. This figure was too small to be a person, unless a child. I have measured the approximate distance that the top of the head was from the ground based on my memory of the figure's position in the doorway, and I believe that it was roughly 3.5 feet tall, altogether smaller and lighter than my son. I could see perhaps a third of the figure, the part that was bending around the door so that it could see me. It had what is that? It had a smooth, rounded hat on, with an odd, sharp rim that jutted out easily 4 inches on the side I could see. Below this was a vague area. I could not see the face, or perhaps I would not see it. A few minutes later, when it was close to the bed, I saw two dark holes for eyes and a black down-turning line of a mouth that later became an O. From shoulder to midriff was the visible third of a square plate etched with concentric circles. This plate stretched from just below the chin to the waist area. At the time, I thought it looked like some sort of breastplate or even an armored vest. Beneath it was a rectangular appliance of the same type which covered the lower waist to just above the knees. The angle at which the individual was leaning was such that the lower legs were hidden behind the door. I was quite shocked. But what I was seeing was so strange, I had to assume that it was a dream. Maybe. This is why I continued to sit in bed, taking no action. Or perhaps my mind was already under some sort of control. In any case, I sat there frightened, but unable or unwilling to deal with what I was observing. My mind explained my vision to me. Despite my full wakefulness, it must be a hypnopompic hallucination. Now, such phenomenon sometimes occurs. One drifts between waking and sleep. I assumed that some minor disturbance had awakened me and I was experiencing such an illusion, and never mind the fact that I felt fully awake. Because of its isolation, the house not only had a burglar alarm, but contained a shotgun which was not far from the bed at the time. Was that why the thing behind the door was wearing a shield? If that was indeed what it was. I have subsequently wondered if an earlier reconnaissance of the house might not have taken place and revealed the presence of the weapon. The previous July, we had had an experience that should be reported here. I was reading at about 11:30 at night when I distinctly heard footsteps. Normal, human-sounding footsteps moved stealthily down our front porch to the area where I had just had a motion-sensitive light installed. The peculiar thing about these footsteps was that they came from the pool area and moved toward the road, the opposite of the direction that they would have come if it was a prowler from the road. At the time, I thought to myself that I would take the gun and go downstairs if the light came on. No sooner had I thought than the light came on. I dashed downstairs but saw nobody, not even though the light was still on. As it was attached to a 15-second timer, I found this startling. I had gotten out onto the porch in no more than 10 seconds, and there was no place for an intruder to hide between the house and the road, not in that short time. A careful investigation, shotgun in hand, uncovered nothing. I had been certain that I would see whomever it was running off. At the time, I even entertained the notion that they might have jumped onto the roof, but there's nobody there. Subsequently, the light never worked right. Although it was in good order earlier in that evening. In September, I took the bulbs out. Later in the fall, the unit was replaced. Back to the present. The little figure at the door. The next thing I knew, the figure came rushing into the room. I recall only blackness after that for an unknown period of time. I don't remember falling asleep or lying awake. What I do remember is far, far more disturbing. My next conscious recollection is of being in motion. I was naked with my arms and legs extended as if I'd been frozen in mid-leap. I was moving out of the room. There was no physical sensation at all. Not of being touched, not of being warm or cold. I could feel myself as a shape and a mass, but not in terms of sensation. It was as if I'd become profoundly paralyzed. Although I wanted desperately to move, I could not. Because of my state of apparent paralysis, I'm afraid that I cannot report that I was floating along on some magical pallet or a flying carpet. It could easily be that I was being carried. In any case, I was at this point in a state of panic. Something was hideously wrong, so wrong that my mind went blank. I couldn't think, even if I'd been able to make a sound, which I doubt. I couldn't try. I must have blacked out because I have no further memories of being moved. The next thing I knew, I was sitting in a small sort of depression in the woods. It was quite dark and a frozen creeper was pressing tightly around me. I remember being startled that there was no snow on the gray earth. I sat with my legs partly bent and my hands in my lap. Although I cannot recall this in any detail, I may have been leaning against something. I was still absent sensation. Across the depression to my left, there was a small individual whom I could only see out of the corner of my eye. This person was wearing a gray tan bodysuit and sitting on the ground with knees drawn up and hands clasped around him. There were two dark eye holes and a round mouth hole. I had the impression of a face mask. I felt that I was under the exact and detailed control of whomever had me. I could not move my head or my hands or any part of my body save for my eyes. Despite this, I was not tied. Immediately to my right was another figure. This one completely invisible except for an occasional flash of movement. This person was working busily at something that seemed to have to do with the right side of my head. It wore dark blue coveralls and was extremely fast. The depression appeared to be no more than 4 feet in diameter, but my eyes were not functioning normally, maybe for no other reason than that I wasn't wearing my glasses. I am mildly nearsighted. While the presence of others remained vague in my mind, the individual to my left made a clear impression. I do not know why, but I had the distinct feeling that this was a woman. And so I shall refer to her in the feminine. She was as small as the others, and appeared almost bored or indifferent. I also felt that she was explaining something to me, but I cannot remember what it was. I struck. I then saw branches moving past my face, then a sweep of treetops. I looked down, and below me the whole tall forest was corkscrewing slowly to the right. There was no chance to question how in the world I'd gotten above the trees. I only saw and recorded. Then a gray floor obscured my vision, slipping below my feet like an iris closing.
This is the end of Side 1.